Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United, and what a podcast we have in store for you today. A very busy one. First of all, we'll have the very latest on Manchester United's interest in Dan Ashworth, the very latest on exactly what stage of ratification we are up to into Jim Ratcliffe's investment in Manchester United. We'll preview the match against Luton this weekend, and we've also got a very special guest on the pod today as well. We're going to be speaking to the head of academy at Manchester United, Nick Cox, as we do a deep dive into the state of the youth setup at the club at the moment. Andy Mitten and Laurie Whitwell are with us. Andy, you are safe home back with Wi-Fi after your Indian adventure. We missed you on the last pod, but that voice note was epic.
Apologies, lads. I left my hotel 6 hours before the flight to give plenty of time to do it and was still unable to do it. It's pretty complicated getting fast Wi-Fi inside an Indian airport. You have to show your passport, and then you have to go for a very simple 26-stage set just to get online. So I managed to get on it, but you just finished. So enjoyed my trip to India. Hope that came across in the podcast. I enjoyed spending a lot of time with Ollie, and yeah, he's decent. He's had some really good offers, you know, that haven't been out in the media. And I think he's just got to take the right one for him. But he's coming at it from quite a strong position. He doesn't need money, so he turns down anything from Saudi. He's very principled, but clearly he can't be picking and choosing in 10 years' time. He's got to be making a decision pretty soon.
Let's talk about Manchester United. So Jim Ratcliffe's investment and the chase for Dan Ashworth. Where exactly are we up to? There's been lots of coverage on The Athletic across this, but it sounds like United are on the way to getting their man.
I think so, yeah. That seems to be the momentum, and there's obviously going to be some negotiations ahead because Newcastle maybe don't want to lose him, but more than that, want recompense if they are going to lose him. I don't think they would stand in his way if he wanted to go. I mean, he could just resign, obviously, but the issue with that is that it's a very long gardening leave. We're told it could be as long as a year. So United want him in as soon as possible, really, you know, ahead of the summer transfer window so that he can put the pieces in place that they feel like he would be able to ahead of that important window. But clearly there's going to be a hefty price to pay. This is a situation where you've got a guy who has got a great pedigree. He's been the one that has made the most sense to me the whole time. There was obviously an idea that maybe because there hadn't been formal contact at this point, that maybe he wasn't at the top of the list, but I'm told that absolutely was always the intention. It was just the case of getting ratification and then United would make their move. And it seems to me that he is interested in moving to Manchester United. He's had that interest before, which we can perhaps go into a little bit. So I think the idea of rebuilding Manchester United is a huge appeal to him. It's not really been totally smooth at Newcastle. He's obviously done, it seems, quite good work, but you've got Eddie Howe there, who has got a strong base and a lot of authority. You've got the PIF, Saudi Arabia fund, who own the club. It was already established as well that the lines of authority before Dan Ashworth went in there. So the current situation is that he has made Newcastle aware that he has had an approach from Manchester United, from Sir Dave Brailsford, to take over as sporting director. There's optimism from Manchester United that this can get done, but clearly there's going to be a price to pay, and it basically comes down to now what numbers are they going to be.
Yeah, David Ornstein's been speaking on the Daily Briefing podcast on The Athletic. I mentioned a moment ago as well that there's lots of great writing on this. Laurie, you've done an extensive backgrounder on why Manchester United want Dan Ashworth to be the new sporting director, the club's first sporting director in the truest sense. It's a very important move, this, for Ineos, Andy, isn't it?
That's a hugely important role. And I'm with Laurie that it feels like it makes sense. There's people who currently work at Manchester United who've worked with Dan Ashworth before. They have a very high opinion of him. There's people close to Manchester United, or people like Gary Neville, who worked with Dan Ashworth when he was at England, and his opinion of him is very high. I spoke to Ollie Gunnar about him, and he'd heard very good things about Dan Ashworth as well. The fact that Manchester United can go to Newcastle United and take a key member of staff is something that fans would see positively, because there've been arguments that Man United are a fading force and not as attractive, but they've gone to Manchester City and got a key member of staff. And there's a lot of optimism swirling around at the moment, because fans are hoping on a brighter future. They're thinking that these are smart appointments and these will lead to a more successful Manchester United. I always think that the proof is in the pudding, but he's extremely highly rated. I think when he was at the FA, he was a director of elite development, and the quality of young England players improved markedly. English players always had size, pace and power, but Ashworth, he worked to develop their football intelligence, the more intricate patterns of play, the more build-up. Probably the best proponent of that was Jadon Sancho when he was playing for England. So I realise that might jar a little bit, but I'm pleased if this goes through. I think it's a good thing. I'm pleased that Sir Jim Ratcliffe and the Ineos deal went through ahead of the Qatari offer. I think we've been pretty consistent about that throughout. So it looks like there's a jigsaw being pieced together. I also read a book by Mick Rathbone, who was a physio at lots of clubs, and he spoke about when Dan Ashworth came in, he was really worried because he thought it's all about sports science, medicine, psychology, and this was an old school physio who couldn't even open a computer, in his own words. And he said, actually, he couldn't believe the attention to detail that Dan Ashworth gave staff like him and got him on board with the project. He was a unifying force, and he was an intelligent man. So I've not heard many bad things about Dan Ashworth.
No, it's certainly an interesting move from United, because he's a very highly sought after executive in football. It's only a couple of years ago since Newcastle had a real battle getting him from Brighton. You mentioned a moment ago about the negotiations and how difficult that might be. There's been speculation that United's bill for this might be even up to, what, seven figures, which is a huge amount of money to pay for a football executive, but maybe underlines his importance. How do you see this going in terms of the negotiation, Laurie? But also, we've seen with Omar Berada, he's had a six-month gardening leave. Are we going to have to wait 6 months to see Ashworth in place at Old Trafford as well if they strike a deal?
That's what Ineos, Dave Brailsford, want to avoid. I mean, Brailsford's got a previous relationship with him through the FA. As Andy's touched on, Brailsford was brought in as a kind of advisory role in 2016, and they've stayed close since that point. So, you know, I think they both understand each other, and that's perhaps what gives this scenario more trust than perhaps another football executive moving clubs and kind of taking a leap into the unknown. But yeah, they want him to start as soon as. So it just comes down to how much money. And yeah, it'll definitely be seven figures at least. You know, it might even be, I saw one report that said 10 million. I mean, it's up to United how much they're willing to go to. They will say, well, listen, it's not absolutely a bed of roses at Newcastle. So do you really want to stop a guy moving on to something and really fulfilling his potential at another club? Or Newcastle's point of view will be, well, if you really rate him, then pay for him. And, you know, we got in there first. United did have the opportunity to get Dan Ashworth before he went to Newcastle. When he left Brighton, there was a call from Richard Arnold to him. Sir Alex Ferguson recommended him. So the kind of level of people that seem to have had good experiences with Ashworth is quite, you know, wide-reaching. But at that point, the proposal was to work underneath John Murtagh, really, at least alongside him. And that wasn't something that Ashworth, to our knowledge, was interested in. He wants to be the kind of leading guy setting the agenda at a club, which is what we should perhaps just touch on a little bit. So he obviously has done recruitment, that, you know, he does deals and things like that. He's not necessarily a talent spotter, though. So for all of Brighton's excellent scouting work, that's not necessarily, you know, down to him. What he is able to do is execute these deals and has a good overall view of what a club should look like on across many different departments, not just recruitment. You're talking medical, you're talking the training ground. So that's the kind of approach that he will take if he is appointed by United. But they do want him to start quickly, back to your original point, Ian, just because they feel that having momentum, making a sort of big impact, going after the best in class as they see it, and hiring these people generates that enthusiasm around United and tells people, the staff, that they are serious about this, and that kind of energises everybody and you get that sense of momentum and progress.
Yeah, I spoke to a couple of staff members from totally different departments at Manchester United this week, and they were talking about this sense of energy that's being given to the club since Ineos have taken a role in changing things. Obviously, we're waiting on the final ratification for this, but it has taken a big step forward this week. There's a genuine optimism about the future. The Premier League have approved Sir Jim Ratcliffe's investment, so too have the FA. We're just waiting for that final piece of the jigsaw, Andy. Do you think it's going to come in the next few days?
I think it's impossible to say a precise date, because I'm told, and Laurie's been told, that there could be a gap as the loose ends are tied up even after the completion. But it's all moving in the right direction. This is going to happen, but until it happens, we can't just say factually that it is. But I've not been told of any potential obstacles. Like you, I've spoke to staff at United. Like you, I've had a positive feedback. And also, when Dan Ashworth has worked at previous clubs, including Newcastle, he's actually kept most of the staff there. He's built around it. He did the same with England. So I referred earlier to the physio. He kept his job. So he's not someone who just goes in and goes, right, I'm bringing all my own people in, which happens a lot in football. He does make appointments, but he keeps a lot of the existing people. It's complicated, the Jim Ratcliffe deal. It was always going to be. I said 8 months ago that he loves a deal, however complicated. He's managed to pull that off, and I think we're 9/10 of the way there now. The fact that United are winning, that appointments are being made, is leading to a mood of enthusiasm among United fans. And also, I'm surprised at some people who were completely against Sir Jim Ratcliffe completely changing their tune now. I'm like, humans are crazy. You like, were so strong going against him. And a lot of this is social media nonsense. And I'm like, we're on the way with Sir Jim, he's going to do this. And calm down. He's not even taken control yet. But clearly behind the scenes, there have been meetings. The Athletic have reported in detail throughout as to what has been going on. More sensible appointments, more wins for the first team and the other teams at Manchester United, which we're going to talk about with our special guest today. The mood is completely different compared to a month or so ago.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right, well, as promised, I'm delighted to say that we're joined by the Director of Academy at Manchester United, Nick Cox. Nick, we've promised our listeners a deep dive into the state of Manchester United's academy and youth development at the moment, and obviously we couldn't have got anyone better on than someone in your role. I understand you might know that as well, actually, because you've listened to a few of these pods down the years, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. I've listened in, not regularly, but I'm aware of your fascination with the youth programme at the club, and yeah, I particularly enjoy. I think you did one post FA Youth Cup final, didn't you?
Oh, don't bring that up.
Oh, it's a bit of a touchy subject, that, Nick, to be honest.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. A sensitive one. Some yeah. Lost footage, right?
But best ever
yeah,
podcast.
We did that one twice.
But no, in general, you do some great stuff, and I enjoy it. So I appreciate your support.
Yeah, moving on swiftly. Let's talk about the academy. I mean, it's been a huge feature of Manchester United's season, especially in recent weeks. the emergence of Kobbie Mainoo, also Alejandro Garnacho as well. You've reached a number of 249 Academy graduates with Omari Forson's debut for the first team a few weeks ago as well. I mean, how proud are you at the moment of the impact that the Academy's having in first team matters?
Really proud. The focus of our work is to support young boys to go and play in our first team. But it's broader than that. We know that the work we do is about also helping young people to have careers and preparing them for a life away from United, and make sure that the process of football development is about nurturing decent young men and developing wider skills. But you can never look too far away from the fact that our purpose, our reason for being here, is to try and see if we can support young boys to fulfil their dreams and go be part of a winning Manchester United team. So when you see debuts, or you see boys slowly kind of establishing themselves in the team or scoring goals or supporting us to win games, enormous pride, and that ripples right through the staff that have often known these boys since they were very, very young, and obviously the other players as well. You know, there's a ripple of excitement amongst the younger players because they see boys doing what they would like to do, and they, you know, they want to go and imitate some of the success that they've seen in recent weeks.
One of those boys that's been really successful recently, Alejandro Garnacho, I think 20 consecutive starts, which is a sign of a real emergence into the first team. Can you just take me back though to when you actually signed him, because it was a difficult period with COVID, and also you two young lads were having a bit of a fight at the time when you were trying to convince him to come?
Yeah, okay, I've talked about this a little bit in recent weeks, and my boys pretend to be embarrassed by this story, but
it's a great
actually
one.
They're quite excited that they have a connection to the Alejandro story. So we brought Alejandro to the club from Atletico Madrid under difficult circumstances. It's usually pretty tricky anyway when you're trying to bring a young boy from abroad to the club and to help them settle quickly into a new way of working and understand a new city and make new friends. It's usually pretty difficult. But we were obviously faced with all the restrictions that COVID brought. We signed him in the depths of lockdown. So whereas I ordinarily would have either gone to meet him, or he'd have flown in and we'd have shown him around and given him a real good taste of the club, that opportunity was denied us by the fact that we were all stuck in our houses. So I had to kind of execute an introductory conversation from my spare bedroom over a Zoom call through a translator. And I was trying to convince him of the opportunity and why this would be an exciting move for him. But what made it more difficult is my boys were in the next room along scrapping over probably the Xbox. And I joke with them now that, you know, if that argument hadn't died down and I'd got distracted, then Alejandro might not be doing what he's doing. He might not be have played 20 games for our first team. So yeah, an amusing anecdote, but a reminder of more that we've got brilliant staff to help facilitate that move, and also of the determination and the kind of single-mindedness of Alejandro himself to make it work, even though it was going to be in difficult times.
Kobbie Mainoo came from closer to home, Stockport rather than Spain. How do you feel when you're watching him now? Are you surprised at how good he is, or could you see something when he was coming through and progressing in teams such as the FA Youth Cup winners in 2022?
I mean, he's always been a high potential player, but that could be said of all of the boys that are in our programme. I think you're in this programme because you show high potential, but you can never quite be sure how things are going to unfold. I'm sure you guys have seen players that you thought might get there that fell short, and equally ones that you didn't know anything about that kind of appeared out, or seemed to appear out of nowhere. That is never the case, but you know, they suddenly are on the scene and you didn't really know much about them. So you can never be quite sure. That's the magic of the job and why I love it so much. But in terms of Kobbie, been here from a really young age, joined Ashton on Mersey School in year 7 because we could see his potential then and we wanted to put a bespoke program around him. And you know, our school relationship is really long-standing, some wonderful staff, and that presents great opportunities for us to just dovetail education and football. And then you know the story about his contribution to the FA Youth Cup. And so he's delivering what we always hoped he might, but you can never be quite sure. But yeah, absolutely proud of what he's doing. And I think since about, for the last 18 months, we've probably known that this was on the cards. It was a case of the right opportunity in the right moment for him. But, you know, as a real young boy, you're never quite sure.
Nick, on Kobbie in particular, some of the praise that he's had in recent weeks obviously have been about his ability, clearly his technical ability in particular, but it's his character that seems to be the one major aspect that's shining through, the composure, the calmness that he's shown in the first team. I interviewed Bruno Fernandes a couple of weeks ago, and that was the one thing that he praised, his maturity as well. How much of a compliment is that to the work that the academy have done with Cobbie over the years, that his footballing ability is clearly there, but actually it's some of the non-footballing side of things, that the mental side of it, that's actually getting the biggest compliments at the moment?
So firstly, I would agree. I think his character and his temperament are super strengths of his. If I think of him as a young player, you know, he was always been a humble, low maintenance focused young man. I think you probably look at quite an athletic player now. That was the bit that was maybe missing as a real young player. If ever you see pictures or footage of him as a kind of 11, 12 year old, he was a little bit behind the curve. So we were waiting on that athleticism to come. And certainly we've always known about his technical ability and the fact that he loves the ball and he's comfortable on the ball. So we needed to see the athleticism come to the fore, which was a matter of time. But in terms of his character, I think we dedicate a lot of time here in the program to try and make sure that we influence character, shape character, try and teach boys the right way to behave on the pitch, off the pitch. There's an enormous amount of work through our psychology team, through our education team, through the general day-to-day approach from our coaches, which is reminding boys of, you know, what is appropriate of anyone connected with Manchester United in terms of being a role model. But I have to say, and I always say this, the main driver in this is Cobbie, and it's credit to him. We are a part of his support network. He has got a wonderful family that have been supporting him. He's had other influences on him, as the same of all of our young boys. There'll have been an uncle or a PE teacher or a friendship group that have all contributed to what he is now. We think we've been a positive influence. We've tried to nurture what we believe are the right behaviours and characteristics. But ultimately, this is down to Cobbie. And you're right, character is so important at Manchester United. I think to go off a tangent a little bit, you know, I did a piece of work during lockdown, actually. I just spoke to lots of successful Man United people, whether that be managers or players, and said, come on, talk to me from a talent ID point of view. What are the main ingredients to go and thrive at Manchester United? And the feedback we got was, look, the Premier League is an athletic league. You have to be athletic, and everyone at Man United has to be able to deal with the ball. But what sets you aside is character. Character is the thing that's going to make you successful at Manchester United. So you better be looking for it. You better be recruiting for it. You better be trying to nurture it. Long answer this, sorry. But part of preparing Cobbie was to show him as many experiences that looked a little bit like the first team. So that's how you build resilience. You're kind of regularly putting the boys into environments that maybe a little bit of stretch, where they feel slightly uncomfortable.
What does that look like, Nick? Is that like promoting him early into higher age groups, playing him in different positions?
Yeah, so in terms of that stretch, it's pushing him up an age group to see if he can cope against players that are a little bit more advanced. It's regularly finding opposition that are going to give you a real challenge. Like, a team that wins every week scares me. I've got to find groups that are going to test our players. And losing's okay. It's not okay. We always play to win. We always strive to win. But I want the boys to have to really strive to win. And so you've got to go around Europe trying to find the best players to play against, the best teams to play against. So he will have been to numerous tournaments over the years. I think my first real connection with Cobbie, we were in America, in Boston. And he was playing in a tournament, and they got to the final. So as an 11, 12-year-old, he was having to play in front of a crowd where people were going, he's a good player, and he knew there was an expectation on him to be the best and to win that game. The FA Youth Cup would have played a huge role in that. So the fact that our fans turned up in force, yeah, they had a nice day out, but what they were actually doing is they were supporting the development of Cobbie and Amari and Dan Gore and Alejandro Garnacho and the others by creating an atmosphere that was going to scare them a little bit and put some pressure on them a little bit. That's our job, is how do we keep showing them? We're never going to recreate our first team, but how do we keep showing them environments that look like the first team? And then the final piece of that is an introduction and an integration into regularly training with our first team. Small doses to start with. As a first-year scholar, he'd have been over there occasionally. As a second-year scholar, he was over there on a regular basis. And then Christmas last year, he kind of was consumed into that group permanently, only really coming back to get some match minutes.
I love that answer, Nick, because you've answered the two follow-up questions that I was going to have, which was about integrating with the first team and Erik ten Hag. How does that conversation go? And then also the environment that you have, obviously you talk about a nurturing atmosphere, which is what you want. Clearly these are young boys at the heart of it, but also there's that edge, isn't there? There's that kind of brutal reality that this is Man United and the expectations there. So how do those two things marry up?
I get asked all the time about, like, how do you make the decision for a boy to go and join the first team? People seem to feel as if there's a decision gets made one day and it's a single moment and you move from one building to the other. It never looks like that. It looks different for every single player, and it's usually a slow process of transition. So the most likely path would be as a full-time player or a first-year scholar. So you're under 17, you've left school, you're now training permanently. We might send groups over en masse to support first team training. Let's say there's an 11v11 kind of walkthrough match at the first team, need an opposition. So we might send 11 players over en masse. Now, the manager won't have asked for players by name. We're just sending a balanced group over to facilitate first team training. And then what happens is one or two of those boys will catch the eye in training. And then the first team staff will also be watching Youth Cup games, league games as well. So slowly they'll be building an impression of these boys. Then there's the other type of opportunity in training whereby the manager specifically might need two players today. I need the left back and a centre forward, and might ask by name, I specifically want such and such a player today. And then it's up to the boys to take that opportunity to see if they can integrate into training on a daily basis. There'll be loads of conversation, some of it formal. So there'll be some scheduled meetings to discuss contract lengths, where we predict the squad to be in 18 months' time, which players do we think are on the trajectory to go and dislodge a current first team player, what do we need to do with loans. So there's some formal stuff. Then there's an enormous amount of informal conversation on a daily basis about, did you see that at the weekend? How did he train today? What do you think we need to do next in terms of supporting the player? Darren Fletcher will be heavily involved in those conversations. Travis Binion, Adam Lawrence, Mark Dempsey, John Murta, and then the manager and his first team staff as well. So it's just this regular dialogue that's just assessing, where is the boy at? Where do we think he can get to? How do we bridge the gap? Now, utopia is that all boys take the Cobby or the Garnacho route, which is that seamless move from youth team briefly into the 21s and then consumed into the first team, because then that player is under our care. We know how they're being coached. We know that they are being taught to play the right ways. But it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes you might need to fill that gap with a loan. So the jump from 21s football to first team is huge. If you're not quite ready for our first team, it may be that you need to be exposed to the rigours of senior football in another environment. And loans will be discussed on a regular basis with that same group of staff.
The under-18s are flying this season, Nick. Won 14 out of 14 before the Derby draw this month. Into the semi-finals of the under-18 Premier League Cup, obviously thanks to the support there in the last round against Arsenal. But the FA Youth Cup, surprise exit to Swindon, same stage as Stoke last season. Should United fans be excited about this crop of players?
Look, we've always had good players. We've got good players now. I love the fact that our fans are excited. I think that's what sets us aside from any other football club, is there's a fascination and an obsession with the youth programme. And I love it when people turn up to watch. And I love it when fans have got their own personal opinions on who the next one might be. And
fans with opinions, Nick, surely not.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. But the one thing I never do is go out there and talk about specific individuals before they've broken into the first team, because I think that puts an unnecessary pressure on players and could be the thing that derails them. So I have to do a lot of work to try and protect the players and not put them in the spotlight. The spotlight's going to come naturally for them at this club at some point. But I love it when fans talk, and it's part of being a fan, isn't it? I mean, you go, oh, I saw him play in the 18s, I saw him play in the 21s, or I saw him play in the Youth Cup, and now he's the first. And you always feel like you were the first and you discovered them. And I think that's amazing. So yes, our fans should be excited, because that's what this football club's all about. In terms of the group we've got at the moment, yeah, a real good group of good players. The fact that they've gone on an unbeaten run, you say it's 14 wins until the weekend just gone. I look at that in two ways. I've got to be careful how I articulate this, right? So if you're going to play for Manchester United, you have to be a winner. You got to know how to compete. You got to play to win. Every training session, you've got to be a winner. It's just a non-negotiable. The mandate is you got to be able to perform in a winning team, and you got to win trophies regularly. So we got to prepare players to be able to do that. So we always strive to win. We encourage our boys to show competitive fire. We want them to compete. But winning is not my currency in my role. So I'm not looking at winning the leagues and winning the trophies as a measure of success for me or our staff. The measure of success is how many individuals do we develop to reach their full potential. Now, full potential for some will be our first team. Full potential for others might be a career away from here. And we've got some great examples of kids that have had wonderful careers away from here. So the team actually is just a vehicle for individual development. I'm interested in the individuals, not so much the team. The individuals have to be team players. They have to know how to function as part of a team. They've got to be a competitor and strive to win, but it's the individuals. So I never want to win at the expense of individual developments. There's a way we've got to play. And there's, like I talked about earlier, there's also this need for me to stretch players to the point where they nearly break. So if you win every week, I'm probably not stretching them enough. So the most satisfying thing about that group that's winning every week is that actually we've used 32 different players. We probably change the team every week. You've seen loads of under 16s play. You've probably seen some of the players that are really thriving in that group now jump into the under 21s. So utopia is we want to win the league, but we want to develop the individuals. Can you do both? Of course you can. That's the sweet spot. That was why, you know, the Youth Cup was so exciting because we won a trophy and we were developing individuals. But my world is not the same world as Erik ten Hag's world. I'm not here to win the league and win the trophies. I'm here to support individuals. And if the byproduct of supporting individuals is trophies, then of course that's brilliant because I want our young players to have a taste of winning and the pressure of playing in finals and the pressure of getting to the top of the league because that's what I want them to have to do in their careers. You mentioned the Youth Cup, a disappointment, but actually you're going to think this is odd. I was disappointed for the group. I would have liked to have seen that group have a cup run because it would have exposed them to experiences that are going to teach them some valuable lessons. So of course I was disappointed, but the context of going out the Youth Cup was, well, we found a challenge that the lads couldn't handle, which is brilliant, right? And that's going to sound perverse, but it's brilliant. We found something they couldn't do. We found that a really organised team with a game plan that we hadn't quite understood on a pitch that wasn't great, away from home, off the back of us winning at that point, whatever it would have been, 12 games in a row, we found the challenge they couldn't handle. So although we didn't win the game, we took a load of learning and actually that helped us to understand where our players' deficiencies were to be able to now build new skills for if they ever face that challenge again. So I live in a weird world, but you know, I'm living a world of long-term planning when football really is a short-term where everyone's thinking about the weekend or next week or whatever. I got to be thinking about 5 to 10 years ahead.
Given what happened in the Premier League Cup game against Arsenal and me being there, I think to get over any obstacles in the next cup matches, just give us a shout, I'll come down. I'm obviously bringing positive vibes.
We had a good morning, didn't we? We were terrible commentators, so we watched the game together, right? It was an entertaining game. It was Arsenal in the quarterfinal of the Premier League Cup, which the boys eventually won. They made hard work of it. But we had a good fun on the touchline, didn't we? And you were particularly impressed by the free chocolate and the free teas and coffees. That was your highlight.
You know the way to Andy's heart. There's no cheese on that occasion, Nick Avail.
No, sadly.
He's also partial for a fistful of cheese.
Next time he comes, we'll make sure there's a cheese stuff.
Nick, you could absolutely hammer me here because I left before extra time, which is
but
when
you know what? I was about to. Well, I was about mind. To. In your world, it was 2-2, wasn't it? But in my world, we won 4-2 in extra time. To your credit, you were off to watch more football. Where were you? Trafford versus Roncall.
Correct.
Right, that's real support. I bet there was no free chocolate bars there, was there?
No, there wasn't. Thanks, no, Big okay. Joe Glazer. Love the chocolate. Love the coffee. Tasted fantastic. And can I have another chocolate bar, please? Is that all right for my non-existent mate over there?
Sounds about right, Andy. I like that you don't change no matter the company that you're in. I want to pick up on a point that you made in one of those answers there, Nick, as well, about fulfilling potential for these players, whether that's at Manchester United or elsewhere, because the match against Luton this weekend brings United up against two former academy players in Ted Mengi and Tahith Jong, who have been, you know, success stories in Luton's return to the top flight this season, their first year in the Premier League, and that those two lads have stood out. I mean, what's your emotion going into an occasion like this against two lads who you obviously have known extremely well down the years?
You make a great point. So our purpose is to help boys reach their full potential. And none of us quite know what their full potential, where that will take them. I talk to the boys a lot about striving for excellence, strive to reach your potential. It's going to take you somewhere magical, even if it's not the place that you thought you were heading. So like this place has helped support young people to go and be coaches and journalists and physiotherapists and firemen and policemen and Premier League footballers and championship footballers and whatever else. And each one of those players, I think, if you talk to them, will, yeah, reference a bit of disappointment when they leave. But we'll also reference, do you know what, I'm really good in this new world because of the experience I had at Manchester United. I'm disciplined because of United, and I've got purpose, or I'm punctual because of Man United. So our job is to help kids thrive in life. Ultimately, we've got a great track record of putting players into our first team, but it's only a small number of our boys that will contribute to those stats. So as youth developers and as passionate staff and as people who are passionate about young people, we just want to help people thrive. We've got a brilliant track record at this club of helping boys achieve in football, but away from this club. So, you know, the leagues are littered with young players that have come through this program over the years. And we take great pride and great satisfaction in seeing boys be successful away from here. We use them as kind of role models for our young players to strive to be like. I love the fact that Tedden is doing great, Chongi's doing great, and Anthony Alanga's doing great, and Charlie Savage is doing great, and the list goes on and on and on. And I promise you that on a Monday morning here, most of the staff will have spent Sunday, and it takes ages, looking through the BBC website, trying to track down not only just our players on loan, the players that left us on a permanent basis. How have they done? Did they start? Did they play? Did they score? Oh, look, he's made his 50th appearance, or he scored his first goal. And on Monday morning, everyone is talking about the boys in equal measure, not just the ones that have pulled on a red shirt and played at Old Trafford, the boys that are having success everywhere. Look, when we play Luton at the weekend, we want to win. We want our boys in our United team to be successful. But you can't not have pride and satisfaction in seeing youngsters that you've known. By the way, we'll have known these boys, some of them like 8, 9, 10. You've been there for their formative experiences. You've supported them on their first day at school, and you've travelled the world with them. It's like, how can you not want to see them be successful? So really delighted for all of the boys that are out there making a name for themselves. It's brilliant.
There's a lot of changes underway at Manchester United. Involvement of Ineos. How do you feel about your meetings? What's been going on? I know nothing's been signed for certain at the moment, but Manchester United fans are getting indications, and a lot of them are positive about what's going on. What's your feeling?
Yeah, really excited. I think it'd be wrong of me to go into too much detail because it's really early days. And as you say, there's still, we're slowly going through the process of ratification, aren't we? But we're not quite there yet. And I also think it'd be wrong of me to start to share too intimately what's going on, because part of being elite is you don't shout loudly about what you're up to. But I think it's widely known that there is a period at the moment where our new colleagues are getting under the skin, trying to learn, trying to understand, trying to work out what the lay of the land is so that they can prepare us for excellence in the not too distant future. So lots of informal conversation. I've had some individual meetings where we've talked about where we're at and where we'd like to get to. And of course, I think I mentioned in the media the other week that Sir Jim and Sir Dave have been to spend time with the whole academy staff and present to them about their experiences and how they hope to be able to support us moving forward, and acknowledge that youth has always been a part of the football club. And accept that the academy has always been and will be a key to the success. My personal feelings are of excitement because you're seeing some individuals with amazing experience, whether that be business acumen or whether that be in Dave Brailsford, just a winner with an experience of elite sport at the highest level. You're seeing them arrive with knowledge and experiences, but also they're bringing a network, right? They work with a number of high-performing environments in sport across the world. So expertise and a network can only help us to improve what we do. I think we're really good. I'm proud of what we do, but I'm not daft. In this world, in the world of sport, it's fast moving. The point at which you sit down and think you're quite good is the point you get left behind. So we've always been striving to improve. We've always been striving to continue to be the best. And the more help that we can have to do that, the better. And I think, again, in the fabric of this football club is innovation, right? We've always been the first to do stuff. We've always been the first to do things differently. You look at any great era of Manchester United, we have always looked to find competitive advantage and look to be different. and that doesn't change. So we've got an exciting period ahead.
Brilliant. Nick, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Pleasure. Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Nick.
Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, that was a treat to have Nick on, wasn't it? We're going to preview Luton in a moment, but Laurie, it feels like Manchester United's youth development is in good hands.
Yeah, I think Nick is a really smart guy, clearly knows the whole fabric of the club and also youth development very well. You know, it's interesting how he came into the club supporting Nicky Butt to begin with, who's, you know, this kind of class of 92 legend. And actually, Nicky recognised that Nick was better suited to have that head of academy role. So you've got that kind of reflection from him. And as he touched on, I didn't know that about him speaking to other people that have been and performed for United or, you know, managed United and asking him, what does it take? Because I do think it's a different quality at United than most other clubs, just because of the scrutiny that you get, that the psychological aspect of playing in front of these kind of crowds and having your performances analysed to death, I think does require an extra element from a player. So I thought that was really interesting. And yeah, he's obviously a very good guy as well. You know, I think in youth recruitment, you can get situations where it's open to, you know, abuse, really. And I think he is somebody that does things very much the right way.
I want Nick working at Manchester United. I think he's excellent, not just for the players who make it, but for those who don't. There's so many sad stories related to youth football, as Laurie touched on. And I think that Nick's holistic attitude is a really good thing. He cares deeply about the development of the human as well as the football.
Yeah, painful for me to relive that FA Youth Cup final podcast again, but nice to know that there are people in influential positions at Manchester United.
A great memory by him, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, pluck that from nowhere. And actually, before we talk about Luton, Laurie, we need to reflect on the story that's broken on The Athletic since we spoke to Nick. And it's a fast-moving situation, this, certainly. It sounds like Manchester United are now interested in bringing in Jason Wilcox as well as Dan Ashworth, who we spoke about earlier on in the pod.
Yeah, fast moving, lots of things happening at Manchester United. As we've said this before, but Ineos, they're not messing about, they're not wasting any time. They've had to pause, haven't they, for quite a while to get the deal done. So now they're in the position, and I know it's not actually fully confirmed. They're still waiting on the tender process to be completed for the Class A shareholders. Once that's done, that's the final hurdle. But yeah, in the meantime, they are clearly making moves to appoint people and sounding people out. Jason Wilcox is a really interesting one. He worked with Omar Berada at Manchester City quite well, so I think that's maybe a link there. But he's since gone on from the academy at Man City to Southampton sporting director, and he's been a part of their rise into the top ranks of the Championship with Russell Martin as the manager. I think that was a Wilcox appointment, and they're playing, you know, expansive football. So United are looking to bring him in what role, it's to be seen, and whether this actually goes through. Again, you know, still the usual caveats apply, but clearly the intention is there from United. And, you know, whether that means that there's other people that get displaced, you know, Darren Fletcher's role as technical director, I think maybe that's something that they come to evaluate and see what other sort of position he might want to fulfill. But yeah, it's clearly a situation that lots of things are happening. The conversations that I've had, I had one last night where it was very much a sense of Ashworth isn't the last thing that we're going to do here. There's more to come. And clearly Wilcox is perhaps a part of that. I think even then they might also add a kind of recruitment specialist as well. Again, it's still to be clear exactly what position and what responsibilities each person that comes in will have. But clearly you get a sense from Ineos that they are, you know, wanting to make a statement very quickly and try and get people in ahead of the summer transfer window.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy few weeks for them and you, Laurie. Right, let's talk about Luton then. Manchester United, we've not even mentioned it yet, really, have we? But the form of late, the consistency that they've shown, it's probably the best moment of the season. Clearly that result against Aston Villa, the first win against a top nine side away from home in the Premier League since Erik ten Hag has been in charge as well, will have given everyone a boost. The performance wasn't perfect, but the resilience, the doggedness that they showed to get that result was a major boost. Got McTominay doing what he did. If you want to know more about that, listen to the last podcast where we indulged in all the details from Villa Park. But going to Luton, Andy, they're going to need to show all those qualities again and more, maybe, because it's been a huge challenge for teams in the Premier League this season playing at Kenilworth Road.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's great that United are in good form, and I am confident going to Luton. I think if Luton stay up, it will be a bigger achievement than any of the top two or three teams winning the Premier League, honestly.
I agree.
It is a miracle. They've not had a rich benefactor. And just look at Luton Town's next four or five fixtures. Manchester United, Liverpool, then it drops off to a team called Manchester City, and then it goes back up. Aston Villa, Crystal Palace. Their story is an incredible one. And people who go to the ground on Sunday, including the players, probably the players more than the fans, because the fans have, it's almost become cliched that the entrance to the away end is between a load of terraced houses. I don't think all the players know.
No, they won't.
What they're in for.
They won't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they are in for an absolute surprise, because I'm not going to say it's ramshackle, because that's disrespectful, and they have rebuilt one side of the ground, which is where I think Laurie and I will be sat. But it's their ground. It's their home. It only seats 11,000, but they create a hell of an atmosphere. And Kenilworth Road is a really important part of their armour. They've been very difficult to defeat, including against Manchester United at Old Trafford. And I spoke to a couple of people after that game, and it said it's really hard when a team defends so deep to break them down. And they're really good at defending. That's what they want you to do. They want you to come onto them, and United tried to play around the shape. They tried to play through the shape, but even though they've lost one or two players, I think I'm really enjoying watching Luton. I used to hate Luton in the 80s because they bring terrible away followings to Old Trafford, but my respect for them and the fans that I've met and the officials and the players I've met, because I went there when they were a championship. Am I allowed to say they're my second favourite team?
I thought it was Trafford.
Yeah, Trafford. All right, after Trafford then. Now, I've got a real soft spot for Luton. I hope they get beat 4-0 at the weekend.
The thing about Luton as well this season, Laurie, is that it seems to have brought the best out in them when the top teams have gone to Kenilworth Road. They've not always won, but you know, you're looking at the results from this season, a 3-2 defeat to Chelsea, a 4-3 defeat to Arsenal, a 2-1 defeat to Manchester City, a 1-0 draw with Liverpool, which needed a stoppage time equaliser from Jurgen Klopp's team as well. Any Manchester United player who goes there thinking that Luton are going to be a rollover are going to be sadly mistaken, aren't they? Because this is going to be a right battle. I can't wait. I'm really excited about this game.
I'm absolutely buzzing. And officially now Andy's told me that he's going to be there as well. I'm well looking forward to this one. I mean, yeah, also all those matches as well, they had like late drama, didn't they? And even the Chelsea one where Chelsea cruised into a lead, but then Luton came back. And I mean, they could have actually ended up winning that game. They had a goal disallowed, I think. It was quite a tight one. Arsenal obviously was a very late winner for them. City had to come from behind. I know they got beat, you know, quite comfortably by Sheffield United last week, which was a real surprising one. And that's one that I'm looking at and thinking, okay, is that just punctuated their enthusiasm because they want a really good run? I mean, even up at St James's Park, you know, ultimately drawing 4-4, but you know, they were 4-2 up at one point. They're having some really good performances from players. Alfie Doughty, I think he's really good from the left. We've got to watch his deliveries. Ross Barkley's having a really positive season after being bought by Nice, to Dave Brailsford's Nice, and not perhaps fulfilling what they hoped he could do, actually. He's kind of showing that maybe that transfer wasn't the most outrageous thing to do. Adebayo, I think his sort of emergence this season has been really refreshing. And obviously Carlton Morris, he's an absolute expert from penalties, isn't he? Just sort of comes up and stutters once and rolls it in the other side. So don't give away a spot kick. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I do think it could be a fun game, you know, where United are kind of having to be, again, resilient, but I think the quality will come through.
The thing is as well, Andy, it's delicate, this mood at United at the moment still, isn't it, with the performances on the pitch and in terms of the results that they're stringing together. And the one thing they have to do is capitalise on that win that they had against Aston Villa last week and keep the pressure up on those teams above them.
Oh, don't get 3 points at Luton and that Villa win is almost wasted. Manchester United need to continue what the team are doing, and that's winning matches, getting the 3 points, closing the gap on the top. United have still only scored as many league goals as Luton Town. So hopefully that changes at the weekend. I should let you into a secret. This sounds really, really sad, but it's absolutely true.
Here we go.
After going to Luton last April, and they told me they were going to build a new stand, I thought, there's no space to build a stand. But they said, no, we're going to do it. It's going to cost 10 million quid. I checked up on the progress of that stand, I reckon 6 times a week last summer.
How?
I was looking at all the Luton websites, all the Twitter accounts. I very quickly established that one guy was flying a drone over it. And I was getting excited because there's no room to build a stand there. And they've actually built a stand. And when I saw they were putting seats into it and it wasn't just a media gantry, because the reason they had to do it was Luton needed new proper floodlights because Premier League rules and proper media facilities. But they've actually built a stand in as well. Stop me here now because I'm just talking myself into a cul-de-sac. But last summer, when I saw that steelwork going in, I was like, yes, I'm liking this.
Andy, whatever floats your boat, I think we've said it before in the podcast, but there's no issue from our side. It's just enjoyable to hear about your exploits.
I'd just love to know what the situation in your family was like. You know, what your wife's thinking when you're there on your phone getting all excited. Is she thinking, who's he texting? Is it another woman? No, it's just he's observing the developments of Luton Town's new stand.
He's watching a drone above Kenilworth Road.
She has got no idea that I was studying Luton last summer, but I was. And when I'm seeing the fans going, how many seats do you reckon we can get in? Over 1,000. I'm like, if they go over 1,000, then it won't be the smallest league ground, because so much was made of it being the smallest Premier League ground. And then Luton came out and going, we've got more seats than Bournemouth. And I'm like, get in there, Luton. If you can stay up this year, this will just be brilliant.
Right, I think we're going to leave it there. Andy and Laurie, it's been brilliant to have you on. I hope you guys listening as well enjoyed the chat with Nick. It was brilliant to have him on. Let us know what you think. devilspod@theathletic.com, and also let us know who you might want us to try and talk to in the future as well. What other topics you want us to take a dive into, because there'll be plenty of opportunity for that between now and the end of the season. But for the moment, thank you for listening. We'll be back after Luton, after Andy's inspected his stand. Oh my goodness, can you imagine how excited he's going to be going to the ground to have a look at that stand in real life? My goodness. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.